Welcome to the Total Wealth Academy radio show, where wealth includes much more than just money. It includes family, fitness, romance, and all the other parts of a balanced life. Listen and learn how 70% of the millionaires in America made their money using real estate. Now your host, real estate investor and consultant, Steve Davis.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Total Wealth Academy radio show. I am your host, Steve Davis, where, as always, we're here together working to improve our financial IQ. Total Wealth Academy is an active and passive, mostly passive, real estate investing platform. We are passively investing in strip shopping centers, hotels, RV parks, apartment complexes, self-storage complexes, anything that produces cash flow. And this seems to be the only business model that's working. The concept that the average American has of scrimping, saving, and somehow saving their way to retirement just doesn't work. 95% of Americans fail to fully retire by age 65. 95%. Only 5% are succeeding. The good news is we know what that 5% are doing. They've got second streams of income, some third, fourth, and fifth streams of income, and 70% of them used real estate to generate that second stream of income. So that's what we talk about on the show. Today I've got a guest coming on, but I want to address something that we talked a little bit about yesterday during the decision-making show, and I really appreciate all the kind words after that show. It really seemed to resonate with people more so than some of the other shows where, you know, it's funny, as a host, you're like, man, this is going to be the greatest show I've ever done, and you get no response. And then you do something basic like decision-making, and you get a tremendous response. So I really appreciate it. But this, I was a little soft on one point, and that is the, I got to talk to my spouse before I make a financial decision. And I tried to do it in a softer way, but I don't think, based off of a couple of emails I got, that I got the point across. So I'm going to do it in a little harsher way. And it's the concept that, what is anything with two heads? A monster. If you're in a household and you're man and wife or whatever the circumstance is, and you say, well, both of us, we're going to both make the financial decisions. We're always going to agree before we take action. You have screwed yourself. That is without a doubt the most ineffective, dumbest way to do it. It doesn't work. And I poke fun at this, but this is the standard answer. Whenever somebody hits me with the spouse objection, oh, I can't join, I can't make a decision today, I have to talk to my spouse, I go, really? How long have you had that policy? And they always answer, you know, 10 years, 20 years. Are you in the financial position you want to be in? No. Then stop doing that. It doesn't work. How many years does something have to not work before you say to yourself, hey, I'm not going to do that anymore? I mean, if you put your hand on the stove and burn your hand, do you put your hand back on the stove the next day? No, it only takes once. Why would you go 10 years, 20 years without getting in the financial position that you want to be in using a policy, I've got to talk to my spouse before I make a decision? That doesn't work. No. Someone has to be in charge. There has to be a leader. There has to be someone who takes responsibility. One person. Two heads, it's a monster. Nobody's ever going to get anything done. It's got to be one of you. And you need to pick that person out and make them responsible for the finances in the family. Now, this doesn't mean you don't still get to put input in. Of course, you get to say your piece, but in the end, one person has to be in charge or nothing will ever get done. I've seen it too many times. Two brilliant people sitting in my office. I go, well, are you going to take action? And because they have this policy of they have to agree before they take action, never in my 30 years of consulting have I seen that work. They look at each other, both of them wishing the other person would make the decision. Neither of them want to take responsibility. You decide. No, you decide. No, you decide. No, I'm going to let you have this one. It's a bunch of crap. It's a cop-out. You're afraid. You don't want to make decisions. You're afraid it might not work. You're going to have courage. You're going to have to take responsibility. One of you. Now, that doesn't mean that you're head of the household on every single decision that's made. There should be somebody in charge of the cars. There should be somebody in charge of the house. There should be somebody in charge of the wealth building. But it's got to be one of you. If you're using that crap, I got to talk to my spouse first, you have screwed yourself because nothing's ever going to get done. So there it is, laid out as harsh as I want to get or I'm comfortable getting, but it is dumb. You would never have a corporation with two CEOs, would you? But the problem is that most people don't look at their family as a business. Your family is a business. And it's supposed to run at a profit. Now, all of you living paycheck to paycheck are going, profit? What are you talking about? Yes, your family is supposed to run at a profit. You have income, you have expenses, and you're supposed to have a margin, a profit. No margin, no mission. Would you ever work for a company with two CEOs? Absolutely not. You go, that's the most idiotic thing in the world. Yet, how many of you are running your family with two CEOs? Doesn't work, does it? So, cut that crap out. Get rid of it. Have a meeting today. Right after work. Whatever. Tomorrow at the latest. Decide who's in charge. And let them start making decisions. Let them take responsibility, and you will be amazed at how quickly things will change in your life, in your family, financially. All right, this is the Total Wealth Academy radio show. I am your host, Steve Davis. We'll be back with my special guests after the break. Thanks for listening. Were you told that it's normal to lose money in a down market? That's just not true. Hi, I'm Steve Davis, CEO of Total Wealth Academy. Our clients make money in both the up and down markets while creating a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing. If you have $100,000 or more to invest, you should consider this to protect and grow your money. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com and click the free sample class button. Thank you.
Hi, this is Steve Davis, and I want to introduce you to my friends at Catalyst Funding. They are a mortgage company built by real estate investors for real estate investors and have helped dozens of my members.
Hi, I'm Wade Como, the CEO of Catalyst Funding. We offer the widest variety of products, including hard money to purchase and repair distressed real estate and products for cash flowing property. We have a 5-star rating across all platforms. Visit us today at CatalystFDG.com/TotalWealth. That's CatalystFDG.com/TotalWealth.
Welcome back to the Total Wealth Academy radio show. I am your host, Steve Davis, and I'm about to bring on a special guest. that is a sponsor or syndicator at Total Wealth Academy. This is an outstanding individual who just completed a deal with a 40%+ internal rate of return, as I recall. We'll get the numbers as we go through it. But this is an outstanding individual that is outstanding in multiple ways. And this is what I look for in a syndicator or sponsor is, do they have a good family? Do they have multiple businesses? Do they own multiple apartment complexes? As weird as this sounds, do they have a lot to lose? Now, Craig McKinley, who's about to come on, has a lot to lose. He's got a great family. He's got multiple businesses. When he puts a deal together, you know it's going to win because he's got a lot to lose. And that sounds weird when I say it that way, but that's what I look for in sponsors. They're balanced individuals. They have multiple aspects to their life, and they produce incredible rates of return. So let's welcome Craig to the show. Craig, thanks a lot for calling in. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing, Steve?
Excellent. Is Linda with you, or was she able to make it?
She is. Yes. She is online.
Oh, hey, Linda.
I'm
how are you doing?
Well. Doing well. How about yourself?
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. The first thing I want to talk about is you just completed, funded, and closed a deal. Could you, just for fun, kind of give me a little brag about the deal? Because that was an incredible deal.
Well, Linda found this deal, so I'm going to let her brag a little bit on herself because she's got great acquisition skills of finding these type of properties. So go ahead, Linda. I'll let you brag about yourself.
Well, we are pretty much underwriting properties every day. We look at everything from location, size, you name it. And I came across this property in contact with a listing agent until we finally were able to secure the deal by submitting an LOI. And then once we were done at this place, at the city, to tour the property, we just saw how much more potential actually had. So that's where Craig comes in also as an operator, and he's able to see beyond what I can see on paper sometimes.
Yeah, that's a good team to have. If you've got an operator that can look at the numbers and go, I can change all of these things and improve the net operating income. Let's go back a moment, though. Linda mentioned the LOI. If you're not familiar with that term, it's just letter of intent to buy the property. It's
yes.
Before you write the earnest money contract. But, Craig, tell me a little bit about what you saw when you looked at that deal at first, when you looked at the numbers.
Well, I always look at economies of scale, what's surrounding the property, what kind of jobs are going to be available for people. And, you know, I one of the things that always bothers me that I hear from people that acquire properties is, it was mismanaged. Well, it wasn't mismanaged because the person that was managing the property, he was doing it the way that he felt was best for his situation, which there's nothing wrong with that. However, when we took it over, and we've only owned it like 2 weeks now, and we've already made phenomenal changes, but we look at it from a different point of view, and the rents are lower than market. There's a lot of areas within the property that we can charge other fees that aren't being charged currently. So we look at a plethora of a lot of different things that basically in the end create revenue for not only ourselves but our investors. And, you know, it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. But the process, when it does happen, and we've done this multiple times, this isn't my first rodeo, we're able to, you know, find out how we can lower expenses and run the property more efficiently. and then also where, what areas we can attack and really, you know, charge higher premiums of services that we're offering, or the actual just, you know, roof over the head apartment for, you know, a workforce person that, you know, is in that area. And like I said, so the economies, the economic drivers in that area were very high. And I just feel like this property, you know, the current owner, when we were looking at it, just wasn't hitting all the bases that he could have. But like I said, for him, it was great for his dynamics and what he was running it for. But for us, we're going to, you know, make a lot of changes and make it for the better.
And those of you that are listening closely, what Craig said is, look, people are always saying this property was mismanaged, but it really is the style of that person and what they wanted out of the deal. I remember the first slumlord property I ever bought. I used the phrase over and over again, mismanaged, mismanaged, but that was the way he wanted to run it. He was going to run it into the ground, take all the profit up front. Excuse me. He took every dime of cash flow, didn't put any money back into it, and then sold it to me at a huge discount. But he didn't care. He had made so much money by, I don't know any other word, and I don't know this is crude, by raping the deal. But that was his style. It was weird. And until you said that, Craig, to me a couple of months ago, I didn't even think of it like that. I always thought they just didn't know what they were doing. That was dumb. Excuse me, sorry. But you're right. They did it for their advantage. Now, you do it differently. You're focused on helping and serving other people. You're focused on providing people a safe, clean, functional, nice place to live. And when I run the numbers, I look at the slumlord business model and I look at the business model you use, you actually make more money doing it your way.
Yeah, we definitely try. I mean, we do lose some of the, you know, we will lose some of the current people that live there because they're so programmed to live the way they're living and paying the premium, you know, the prices they're paying. They just don't understand when you start upgrading things and making things nicer, new signage, new lighting, you know, upgrading the office and the clubhouse and the gym. All these things obviously cost money, and in turn, that's a service for them. Some people see that and they're willing to pay more because they're getting more, but some people don't want that change, so they move out. And you know, that's something we can't always control. But yeah, I mean, that's what this is about, is making a great place for people to live and getting the best market rent we can for what we're providing. And that's how we underwrite these properties and write up our numbers. And like I said, this is our fifth apartment community we've purchased, and we're very excited about it. And yeah, we just literally closed at the end of last year. So
yeah, it's an incredible deal, and I'm so glad you were able to get funding and closed on time. Tell me a little bit about the clientele now so that people understand what it takes to stabilize a property. Now, you already mentioned that some of the people are going to move out because, well, they don't want to pay more for a nicer place. They're going to move to another place just like it or worse. Is there any problem, any criminal activity that you're going to have to get rid of? Is it that type, or is it just, you think a few people are going to move because it's just going to be improved?
So I've had that property before, and it makes it much more difficult, but it is something you can do. With this property, we don't have the criminal element. We are in a very good area of town that this property is in, and I just feel that a lot, I wouldn't say most, but I would say a majority of the people that live there have been there a while, and they're used to paying, you know, the price they're paying. And And I, you know, from what I can see and all the applications we went through on the pre-lease, the feasibility, which is our inspection, and we not only look at the actual bricks and mortar and sticks and plumbing and all the things that go into the inspection process, we also do it on the actual leases and their applications to see what their backgrounds are, if they've been screened. So the people in general are, you know, pretty good income earners. We just feel like there's more to offer in this area, and our competition, which we call comps, is charging a lot more for rent with the services they provide. And once we provide those services and amenities better, then we'll be able to get more, you know, closer to the market rents.
Yes, and Steve, if I may interact here, in many instances, what I believe also is that even if it's not there are no changes, but just the fact of knowing that there's, you know, there's someone new, it's kind of like a new sheriff in town, there is that potential of any particular change, even if the change is always for better. But, you know, we're all human beings. We don't like change many times. And so many people may just want to mitigate by moving to another place, even though there may not be anything that will go in the opposite direction. If anything, everything's always going to go better. So it's just life and psychology sometimes.
Yeah, and I think the way that you're placing it, and it seems to me that if they do leave, they're going to have to leave the neighborhood because everything else in the neighborhood has higher rents. And so they're going to have to make a decision of, look, I'm going to have to spend money to move, and I'm not going to be able to find a lower rent. I think you're going to have a lot of people stay. What's your thoughts, Linda?
Well, I really can't give you a definite. I can just tell you my experience is usually about 10 to 20% leave, and the others embrace the change and like it. So that's been my experience in the past of doing this.
Okay, we got to go to break, Craig. Give me just a minute. We got about a 3-minute break, and we'll come back and talk some more. This is the Total Wealth Academy radio show. I am your host, Steve Davis, along with my special guests, Craig and Linda McKinley. They are sponsors, syndicators at Total Wealth Academy, and we're talking about their most recent acquisition. Thanks for listening. If you have a financial planner, ask them these two questions. One, will I lose money in a down market? Two, do I still pay you if I lose money? If the answer to either question is yes, fire them and come see us. Our clients make money in both the up and down markets and create a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com and click the free sample class button. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com. Thank you. Let's get my guests back on, Craig and Linda McKinley, who are sponsors with, did you say 5 apartment complexes now?
Well, we don't own all 5 of them now, but we have bought a couple. We've sold.
So. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about this. It takes a lot of courage to get up one day and say, you know, I'm going to go sponsor a apartment complex. I would like to know what it was that was the impetus for that. What motivated you both to get into this? Because a lot of the listeners are sitting there going, man, I want to do something different with my life. I want to invest passively into apartments, or I want to even do my own apartment, but they're unable to get themselves to take action. What caused you to take action? What was there a defining moment?
So I feel one of the biggest motivators for me is I saw others doing it. And I felt like, quite honestly, I listened to their story. I saw who they were
And I said, you know, I really feel strongly that I can do this, possibly a little better. You know, you always think that kind of like a Monday morning quarterback. But that's pretty much what I saw is other people that had done it before me. And, you know, the real estate group I used to be a part of, there was many people that I saw that were sponsoring, you know, apartment multifamily properties as assets, and they were syndicating them, which basically means bringing a lot of people's money together to purchase and utilizing a loan for leverage from either the bank or, you know, the government. And it just seemed like something that was doable for me. Obviously, there was a lot I had to learn. My very first property was very small. And I'm glad that I started that way because I know others that would, you know, be against that. They would want to get the largest one they could the first time. I was opposite of that. I wanted to learn it from the ground floor up. I thought I would be much better at managing if I, you know, owned my own on my own and it was a smaller one because I would take, you know, I would be a part of everything with the management, not just, you know, hiring people, but also dealing face-to-face with the tenants. And, you know, once I purchased that first one, it's kind of like anything, a Lay's potato chip. You can't just eat just one. So I wanted another one and another one, and it's just continued. And I feel that, you know, I've grown over the years, and now we're starting. I mean, it's only been a week. The ink isn't even dry on the contract, and we're already looking at two other properties right now. So, wow. I mean, that just shows you when you see something and you achieve it and you can continue doing it, rinse and repeat, that's all you want to continue to do. So it's definitely something that, you know, you have to put a lot of time into, and it's not easy, but once you accomplish it one time, it becomes much easier the second and third time around.
Yeah, it really is just duplicating. You know, you win at something, just do it over and over again. I see so many people buy, and we'll go back to single family for this example, but they buy six houses their first year, and then you see them 5 years later and you go, well, how many you have now? And they go, six. It's like, man, if it works, you want to do it over and over and over and over again until you reach your financial goal. Linda, you started with single family. Yes. At what point did you decide, hey, I'm going to do apartments?
Well, I actually started single family and investing passively in multifamily as a silent investor. So that's pretty much, I was doing it both on tandem per se, and still learning always from other investors that they were actually already doing the syndications. So that's pretty much how I started, and just getting very involved with them. I got to actually meet by extreme networking. I got to meet several brokers and syndicators. So then I got my license and started working as a realtor. I went straight into multifamily, and I have already done really good with finding properties for other investors as well on multifamily.
Oh, so you've actually sold some apartment complexes to some other syndicators?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it already for 7 years.
So did you help them underwrite their deals? Because you seem pretty skilled at that.
Yes, I do. Now, everybody has their own style, but, you know, I like to really do my research in the market, depending on which property I'm looking at. And obviously bring it to a potential investor that either may have some other properties already in the area, so that way they can increase their portfolios. Or if it's a smaller property, somebody that wants to get started out, I can also do that. So So yes, I help them underwrite some other investors, the seasoned investors. They already do their own underwriting, but at the same time, I can help them pretty much schedule and organize and inspections and everything that goes along with acquiring the property.
Very cool. Okay, I've got an email here from one of your partners that has a question for you. Let me open the phone lines before I address this. It is 281-558-5738. If you have a question for Craig or Linda or myself, give us a call, 281-558-KSEV, or you're welcome to email me. A few of you already have. It's steve@totalwealthacademy.com. steve@totalwealthacademy.com. And this is actually one of your partners, Steve. He asks what you think about South Texas and the borderland. Are those areas due for some growth? Would it be good to target that area compared to the big metro areas?
Well, I like the Rio Grande Valley a lot. I've invested quite a bit of money myself in this area, Rio Grande Valley. And the reason I feel is just we're seeing a lot of movement of people moving there. And not only that, but a lot of jobs are coming to that area as well.
Yes, we like it.
I mean, I can't say enough about it. I'm very happy that I invested in this area, and I'm continuing to do so.
And where are you in? Is this McAllen, Harlingen, Brownsville, places like that?
So, yes. I mean, Brownsville is a little more south. I have not invested in that area. I have looked in that area. I haven't been able to get anything underwritten that makes sense for me in that area, but I'm not opposed to it. I will look at properties in that area. I'm more in the a little bit west, probably about an hour west of the Brownsville area. McAllen, Mission, Edinburgh, all pretty much right there, far. This is part of the Rio Grande Valley I really like. UT Rio Grande Valley. The university is right there. There's many hospitals. Like I said, there's tons of economic drivers right now in this area, and I really do like it. I think it's a smart place to invest.
Okay, we got to go to break. We'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. This is the Total Wealth Academy radio show. If you've got a question for Craig, Linda, or myself, give us a call, 281-558-5738, 281-558-KSEV. This is AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thanks for listening. Hi, this is Steve Davis of the Total Wealth Academy radio show. Most people think they need hundreds of thousands of dollars to successfully invest in real estate. That's simply not true. If you have $100,000 or more, you can begin passive investing today. No worrying with contractors or tenants, and you get all the benefits of real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com, and click the free sample class button. Thank you. Welcome back to the Total Wealth Academy radio show. I am your host, Steve Davis, along with my special guests, syndicators and sponsors, members of Total Wealth Academy. They sponsor deals and buy apartment complexes with other members at Total Wealth Academy. And if you've got a question for them, it's Craig and Linda McKinley. And you can call us at 281-558-5738, 281-558-5738. KSEV. So Craig and Linda, I don't know who wants to answer this. What is the internal rate of return you guys shoot for? Do you focus more on cash flow? What is the determining factor for moving forward on a deal and putting that LOI in place?
Well, our biggest thing we look at is cash on cash return for our investors. We always try to at least get 7%. Sometimes, I mean,
we're obviously getting more than that on several of our properties right now to our investors, but that is our pretty much minimum. If we don't see a 7% cash on cash return, we pretty much, it's, I wouldn't say it's a done deal, but most of the time, that's pretty much our main focus. The IRR on this particular property is really high because the price per door is very low on this property. We're very fortunate to get it at the price we did. Our cash on cash return is just above 8% for the first year. Obviously, that's going to grow over time. But, you know, out of the gate, that's pretty much what we like to see. Now, that's typically on a hybrid or a yield play property, which basically means we don't have to put a lot of, you know, work into the property, a lot of capital expenditures, meaning like roof, foundation, siding, paint, things like that. When it's a devalue, which we've done one of those as well, that's more of a, you're not going to get cash on cash return probably the first to the second year, because what you're doing is completely repositioning the property. You're fixing all the problems. You bought it at a very good discount, kind of what you talked about in the beginning with your property you bought. You're buying it at a huge discount, but you also have to have time to put all those, you know, capital expenditures into the property to repair it, to make it nice and livable again, and then you're moving in people. So that all takes time. It's a process. So in that case, the cash on cash return, probably, like I said, for the first year to 2 years is probably not existent. But the way you're going to make your money on that property is the appreciation of value due to all the work you put in it. And then the cash on cash return becomes relevant after that time period, and you move in the new, you know, tenants into their apartments. Then the revenue starts, and then, you know, the distributions take place.
Well, on the deal you just did, didn't you pick up a large chunk of equity the day you closed?
Yes, we did. And that happens sometimes. You get fortunate. I mean, we're very fortunate to have Linda on our team as our acquisitions manager, because she was able to determine this pretty quickly with buying this property, and that's why we put it under contract so quickly, as we knew there was equity capture from day one. And we literally, at minimum, double our money the minute we invest. So if somebody invested $100,000 in this deal, their money became $200,000 by the time we closed, because our plans of owning it for at least 3 to 5 years, they will get that money out of it in that time frame because of the way we purchased it.
That is phenomenal. That's crazy. 100% rate of return the day you close. Amazing. We got a caller. Let me get my call screen up. Phone lines are open, 281-558-5738. Oh, let's go to the Heights now and talk to Zach. Zach, thanks a lot for calling in. How are you today?
Hey, Steve, friend of the show. My question changed, actually, as I was listening to you guys talk. So I've always wondered that. How does that work? How is that possible to get the 100% return upon close in that scenario? Because I'd always heard that famous statement that, like, real estate, you know, it's basically worth what somebody's willing to pay for it. And if you just paid that price, then that's what it's worth, right?
Yeah.
But so I was just kind of curious, how does that actually work? How do you close and then have 100% return on your money? I know it's not actualized, but how does that work?
Here's the thing, Zach. That little comment of it's worth what somebody's willing to pay for it, I've actually double closed houses where I paid $400 for it, and I'm just throwing a number out there because I've done this and made at least $100. So I had under contract for $400. The day I closed, I sold it for $500. Just a double close. So that's not always true. That's, Zach, that's one of those rules. But what do we know about rules? There's exceptions to the rule.
Yeah, meant to be broken, yeah.
Yeah. So in this scenario, if they paid $5 million for it, it appraised at $7.5 million the day they closed. That's a big $2.5 million pickup. Craig, how do you want to answer this?
Well, I would answer it the same way. I mean, it appraised for more than what we bought it for. But not only that, the real marker here is, I believe it was either a week or 2 weeks after we had it under contract, Linda received a call from another broker she knew, and they basically offered us $1 million to walk away from the property.
And wow.
I mean, that's when you know you have something.
Sounds like the seller was a fool.
Well, and see, I don't think that. I feel that he just, the type of business he was in and what he was using the property for made him very rich. And so I don't feel he was a fool. I just don't think he really knew what he had. But, I mean,
yeah,
you know, we can go on and speculate all those kind of things. The bottom line is we know what we bought it for was much lower than the market competition that's there. And that's why we pounced on it so quickly. We put it under contract. We didn't, you know, the little things we found during our inspection process, we didn't go back to them and complain, which is what a lot of people do, which I disagree with. But, you know, we, like I said, it appraised for more than what we bought it for. And the equity capture is there, and that's what we're talking about. When you leverage the bank's money to purchase the property and you have, whether it's 20 or 30% of your money in the deal, and you could sell it, you know, a day later for more than what you bought it for. I mean, that's pretty much what we're looking at when we talk about immediate equity capture. And that's what we have here.
Just realize, Zach, it's not realized.
Because Steve, you always talk about how the, which, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I think it's awesome. That's why I want to learn. But because on the commercial side, right, you've got the net operating income determines the value of a property, right? Now, I guess people, just like you said, some people, depends on how, what you know, relationships. Steve, you told the story. I've been to your program before about how you did your first commercial and you kind of dumped it too early, remember, or something like that? So the same thing can happen. It's just interesting. But I always wondered how that happens with, like, banks doing the cap rates, and then you've got the NOI, which is how you ultimately value a commercial property. So I would have thought, and maybe this is true, commercial properties, are they more easy to value than a single family or harder?
Wow, that's a tough question. It's probably six one way, half a dozen the other.
Okay.
Because I've seen people do their comps wrong, and I've seen people do their cap rates wrong. I saw a deal a month or so ago, they left out loss to lease, so their numbers were completely off. They're probably just as hard.
Okay, but at bottom line is traditionally on commercial, you get a property and you increase the income is traditionally how a lot of times you increase the value over time, right?
Yeah.
Correct, and by lowering expenses or getting rid of unnecessary expenses, and you would be surprised when you underwrite properties and then you purchase them and you're managing them and you see where people just throw money at problems that you could easily solve if you took the time to, you know, either get mentorship and help to find ways. And also,
Craig, you know, I've got to stop you because we are at the end of the show. We've got about 10 seconds. Craig and Linda, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Zach, thanks for the questions. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great rest of your day.
You've been listening to the Total Wealth Academy radio show. Please remember that this show is for entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investing advice. Always get a professional opinion before making any investment decisions. To find out more about coaching and consulting at Total Wealth Academy, visit TotalWealthAcademy.com and attend one of our free sample classes on real estate investing. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.